Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. WHO calls for renewed COVID prevention efforts amid Omicron variant spread.
The solution is not about banning travel, but our ability to identify the potential risks, mitigate the risks, while we are still facilitating international travel, because we have seen the devastating effects that COVID had on the economy.
Zimbabwe says it is prepared for the Omicron variant. Sudan's military leader and prime minister make changes in the country's security sector. Sierra Leone's anti-corruption commission charges a former presidential candidate and four others with corruption. And the deputy chair of Gambia's Truth Commission says anyone who knowingly committed crimes against humanity should face the consequences.
If you participated in any of those crimes that I have mentioned, you were holding public office, you knew what your obligations were, what your commitments were, you did not have to carry out an illegal order.
And Cameroon says its citizens abuse LGBTI people. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. World Health Organization says renewed efforts to prevent the spread of the coronavirus is needed as scientists scramble to determine the risks posed by the new Omicron variant. Low vaccine rates combined with public fatigue over safety measures are putting more people in Africa at risk. Linda Gifters reports from Johannesburg.
Experts say it's no surprise a new variant of the coronavirus has been discovered. Fewer than 8% of Africans are vaccinated against COVID-19, creating an environment for the illness to spread and mutate. Dr. Mary Stephen is a technical officer for the World Health Organization's Africa office. She says in the absence of vaccines, the public needs encouragement to uphold other measures to reduce the spread and save lives.
We cannot be tired. We have to continue to make sure we are complying with wearing of our face masks, keeping our distance away, avoiding unnecessary mass gathering, ensuring we are keeping hand hygiene. So that it's another layer of protection in addition to the vaccination.
South African scientists detected the Omicron variant last week. Research is underway to determine how transmittable it is and its reaction to vaccines. Amid uncertainty, Britain, the United States, and European Union reacted by imposing travel bans to Southern Africa. Stephen, however, says the variant has already crossed continents, and that halting flights to African countries that have long enforced testing for travelers is the wrong response.
The world should react to them with solidarity. The solution is not about banning travel, but our ability to identify these cases, identify the potential risks, mitigate the risks, while we are still facilitating international travel, because we have seen the devastating effects that COVID had on the economy.
Jeremiah Chikudu is all too familiar with the economic toll of the pandemic. The 45-year-old Uber driver says two of his cars were repossessed last year because he could no longer afford the payments during lockdown. Chikudu says he fears he's about to take another financial hit with the new variant.
I see us like losing close to, let's say, 50% of what we've been aiming recently. Relying on Uber, business was down. That means I was not going to be able to provide for the family.
Despite the pandemic's impact on him, Chikudu says he's still hesitant about getting vaccinated. With the threat of a new variant, experts are hoping people like him will reconsider. Dr. Michelle Groom is with South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases.
Hopefully, you know, with some concern over a coming fourth wave, hopefully, you know, those that were on the fence may actually go and vaccinate.
More than 3,200 people in South Africa tested positive for COVID-19 on Saturday, a marked increase from the day before. The government is campaigning for more people to get vaccinated and even offering grocery vouchers to those who get their shot. Government data show that at least 41% of South African adults have now been vaccinated. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's government says the country is very prepared to handle the new COVID-19 variant Omicron, first reported in neighboring South Africa. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the World Health Organization says a fourth wave of the pandemic is most likely to hit Africa.
Zimbabwe's Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, who doubles as the country's health minister, has asked the nation not to be concerned about Omicron.
The country should not panic, because we are very prepared. The ramping up of our vaccination program in the past month has seen marked increase in the vaccination uptake. That is the prevention which we are going to have to our people. If any other variant comes, at least when your body is protected, it is much better than when you are found naked.
Zimbabwe has fully inoculated about 2.8 million people since February, when it began its vaccination program to contain the COVID-19 pandemic. The government is a target of vaccinating at least 10 million Zimbabweans, or 60% of the population, by the end of the year, a figure which might be difficult to reach given the scarcity of resources and short time left. Itai Rusike, head of the non-profit Community Working Group on Health, says Zimbabweans should panic about the new variant, initially named B11529, since the country shares porous borders with South Africa and Botswana.
And this new variant is also coming at a time when the festive season is upon us. A whole lot of Zimbabweans, they use these undesignated entry points. That poses a serious health challenge, as they will not be properly screened and monitored as they come back to the country. What we now need to encourage, you know, the government of Zimbabwe, is for them to strengthen their surveillance and monitoring system, especially the land borders, and also make sure that the screening and monitoring at the legal entry points is also strengthened.
Meanwhile, Humphrey Karamagi, a medical officer at the World Health Organization Regional Office for Africa, said on the WHO Twitter account that a fourth wave of COVID-19 is likely to hit the continent.
A fourth wave in Africa is almost a certainty, as long as we still have these factors in play, which is new variants coming up, and also the fact that people can get reinfected, and also if we're getting new populations who may have not yet been exposed, we then would always have subsequent waves. Vaccination really helps a lot in terms of reducing the severity of disease, but also reducing the risk of infection. The vaccine is not a magic bullet. So the vaccine needs to work together with the public health measures to reduce the potential risks and effects of subsequent waves.
The WHO says COVID-19 has infected about 6.1 million people in Africa and claimed 152,113 lives. The World Health Body also says more than 227 million vaccine doses have been administered in Africa. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
In Sudan, reinstated Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok over the weekend dismissed the Director General of Police, Lieutenant General Khalil Tahmakdi, and his Deputy, Lieutenant General Sadiq Ali Ibrahim, and immediately replaced them. Meanwhile, military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan Sunday reportedly dismissed 8 intelligence officials, including the intelligence chief. Journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital Khartoum says the dismissal of the police chief and his deputy could be related to alleged violence perpetrated against pro-democracy protesters.
The head of Sudan's military did some changes, replacing some of the senior intelligence officers in Sudan. We could literally say maybe some of these changes are linked to that, because as you know, the military takeover that happened on the 25th of last month, not all the military officials or military personnel were in support of that. So this could clearly indicate that, okay, maybe these are some of the officials who were actually opposing some of the decisions taken by the military. Or we could say maybe this decision, the replacement or dismissal, is even part of the reform that the military or the Sudanese government has been talking about.
At the same time, we are hearing that Prime Minister Hamdok has also dismissed the country's police chief and his deputy. What is happening?
Yes, the two officials were dismissed and replaced immediately. It has been related to the series of the protests that has been taking place a few days ago. If you could remember, there has been a lot of reports of excessive force against the pro-democracy groups. According to the Sudanese doctors, almost since the 25th of October up to last week, almost more than 40 Sudanese pro-democracy groups were actually killed during the protests. As I speak, some of the wounded are still under medication in the hospital. Upon the arrival or the return of the Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok to his position, this is one of the decisions he has taken to replace the police chief and his deputy. We don't know yet whether they are going to take further legal or administrative measures against them or not, but they have been replaced with the new officials. This has also have received a lot of applause from the Sudanese citizens, because they believe the police chief and his deputy has contributed so much to the using excessive force against the peaceful protesters within the last few days.
What is happening, Michael? On the one hand, you have General Burhan making these changes in the intelligence sector and the prime minister replacing the police and the deputy. Are the two working in unison or are they working on parallel levels?
According to the new political declaration that was signed between Hamdok and Burhan a few days ago, it talks about reforms within the military institutions, including the police and the security and also the army. So I believe the two simultaneous changes are actually part of the implementation of the political declaration that has been signed between the two leaders.
That was journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 29th. The deputy chairperson of Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission, the TRRC, says she is confident that even if the Gambian government does not implement the commission's recommendations, the country's civil society will make the government do so. Adelaide Sosset says civil society organizations in the Gambia have already developed a roadmap on how to hold the government to account. After hearing testimonies from nearly 400 witnesses about allegations of torture, unlawful killings, rapes, and attacks on political opponents during Yahya Jammeh's regime, the commission submitted its final report last week to President Adama Barrow. Among its recommendations are prosecution of persons who bore the greatest responsibility of human rights violations and abuses, and the banning of perpetrators from holding public office. Deputy Chairperson Sosset says anyone who knowingly participated in committing crimes against humanity should be prepared to face the consequences.
You know, we cannot disclose what is in the report itself, but I guess people can read between the lines. If you say people who bore the greatest responsibility, just listening to the witnesses, the victims, the perpetrators, and all those who came forward, one can easily read between the lines who bore the greatest responsibility.
You mentioned listening to the witnesses. What are some of the heinous human rights abuses that your commission gathered from the hundreds of testimonies that you listened to?
The unlawful killings. Can you imagine migrants coming through your country? You don't even know. And in West Africa, we have the ECOWAS protocol, where West Africans can come into your country and stay for 90 days. Before you start asking them questions of what they're doing there, and you overnight, you just butcher 67 West African migrants on the excuse that you thought that they were mercenaries, and all the other unlawful killings. Once they saw you as an opposition, once you had a different view, dissenting voices, divergent voices were not allowed. So the killings, the enforced disappearances, the witch hunts, sexual gender-based violence, presidential treatment, you name it. And the huge ones were really the killings and the enforced disappearances and the witch hunts.
You're also recommending banning individuals who committed alleged human rights abuses from public service?
Yes, that's also a recommendation, yes. If you participated in any of those crimes that I have mentioned, you were holding public office, you knew what your obligations were, what your commitments were, you did not have to carry out an illegal order.
Madam, in neighboring Liberia, the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission have yet to be implemented, despite thousands of dollars spent on its work. In the Gambia, your parliament recently voted out the draft constitution. Is it not possible that the recommendation of the TRRC will suffer the same fate?
I am very confident that even if the government does not take the steps that it should take, the civil society organizations in the Gambia, the victims' organizations, have taken ownership of the TRRC process and have accompanied us through this journey. And I know that they will never let this just go like that. They will never, that I can assure you. Civil society had also developed a roadmap on how they're going to accompany the recommendations of the TRRC. So whether it is done immediately or whether, as I give my favorite example, is whether it takes 22 years like this, it's an arbitrary one, it will happen. It will be implemented. That I can assure you. I may not be around to see it, but wherever you are, just see the deputy chair of the TRRC had said that civil society would hold government to account for the implementation, and the implementation will be done.
Madam Sose, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, James. It is a pleasure to...
Adelaide Sausset is the Deputy Chairperson of Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. She was speaking with us from Banjul. Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission has charged the former presidential candidate of the former ruling All People's Congress APC party and four others with 48 counts of corruption. Samura Matthew Wilson Kamara is charged with one count of misappropriation of public funds amounting to $2,560,000 that was meant for the reconstruction of Sierra Leone's Chancery Building in New York. Samura Kamara said in a statement that he will work closely with his legal team to clear his name. Patrick Sandy is the spokesperson for Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission.
The former Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Dr. Samura Malti Wilson Kamara, who also happens to be the former presidential aspirant, as you have indicated, is charged by the Anti-Corruption Commission on two counts of corruption offenses. One count on misappropriation of public funds, contrary to Section 36(1). And that is in the amount of $2,560,000, being monies meant for the reconstruction of the Sierra Leone United Nations Permanent Rep Chancery Building in New York. And the other one count is for deceiving the principal, contrary to Section 40, Subsection 3 of the Anti-Corruption Act of 2008, as amended in 2019.
What can you tell us also about the other co-accused? What is their role in these alleged corruption allegations that your commission is making?
In addition to Dr. Samura Marty Wilson Kamara, Saidu Nalo and Fode Vafumba Bawo are jointly charged with 10 counts of corruption offenses. And you have also Fode Vafumba Bawo separately charged on 10 counts of corruption offenses, involving failure to comply with applicable procedures and guidelines relating to the management of public funds, conspiracy to commit corruption offense, abuse of office, and misappropriation of public funds amounting to $1,592,200, being funds meant for the reconstruction of the Chancery Building in New York. Jill Sanders Davis, who is a contractor and an American citizen, is charged separately on one count of fraudulent acquisition of a benefit and one count of knowingly deceiving a principal as he gave requisitions which contained statements that were defective and meant to deceive the principal, which is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation.
Patrick Sandy is the spokesperson for the Sierra Leone Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Cameroon says lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people are increasingly becoming victims of violence and brutality. The Central African States government made the comment this week after Human Rights Watch reported degrading treatment of LGBTI people and called on Cameroon to hold perpetrators accountable. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
About 15 people are shouting and beating a person they claim is homosexual. In the video, widely circulated on social media platforms, including Facebook, WhatsApp, and YouTube, the mob forces the naked person out of a room, pulling their legs apart and saying the person is a man dressed and behaving like a woman. Human Rights Watch said in a November 20 dispatch that the video is that of a violent mob humiliating a 27-year-old intersex person in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Rights groups say Gabon is one of the few countries in sub-Saharan Africa to remove a law that punishes sexual relations between people of the same sex. Human Rights Watch Central Africa researcher Ilaria Alegrozi says the perpetrators of the Yaoundé abuse filmed the attack, which lasted for several hours. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the signing of a historic memorandum of understanding agreement between CAF and FIFA that will pioneer a new era in the advancement of professional refereeing in Africa. The MOU was signed by FIFA President Gianni Infantino and CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe in Cairo, Egypt, during the 13th CAF Extraordinary General Assembly. The anchor of the agreement is Refereeing Star Project, an initiative that aims to produce world-class referees from the African continent and also contributes towards the development of referees in the 54 CAF member associations. Dr. Patrice Motsepe is CAF president. He speaks on the project.
We've just signed a big deal for FIFA to train our referees, African referees, to make sure that these African referees, our referees that we've got confidence in, can and that we pay well, can also officiate in some of the top football games in FIFA in the World Cup. So Gianni, as the president of FIFA, has really been most supportive.
In the meantime, the 52 members of the Confederation of African Football unanimously voted to support the proposal for a biannual FIFA World Cup. FIFA President Gianni Infantino, who was in attendance at the 13th extraordinary meeting of CAF in Cairo, told reporters that the biennial competition will encourage inclusion among football-loving nations.
There is nothing like playing a big tournament in order to boost the game, in order to create unity, inclusion in a country and between countries. So to create more of these opportunities is certainly something which is crucial for the future of football all over the world. We cannot say football is global if then we exclude 80% of the world.
Away from the CAF General Assembly to the CAF Confederations Cup, where several matches were played in the additional second preliminary round. Congolese AS Otoho took the upper hand over Kenyan visitors Gomahia, with Roland Okori scoring the game's long goal as Ghana's Hearts of Oak won 2-0 in Accra over Algeria's JS Saoura. Nigeria's Rivers United will take a slim advantage to Egypt after beating Al Masry 2-1 at home. On the start, Felix Houphouët-Boigny in Abidjan answered, putting a brilliant second-half fight to beat Angola's Interclube 2-0. While in Monrovia at the Canyon Do Sports Complex, South African giants Orlando Pirates picked a similar 2-0 victory over Liberian host LPRC Oilers. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, November 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a